really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.
Well, it's that time here in Spain where we welcome Brett Hansen from Brevins Franks. How are you doing, Brett?
I'm good, thanks, Howard. Very good. What about yourself? How are things?
Well, with Christmas on the horizon, how do you think I am? Anyway, since these weekly discussions are taking a two-week break over the holidays, I think this week Brett and I are going to take a look back at the financial news and developments of 2022. It's been another difficult year, with probably the biggest story being the Russian invasion of Ukraine, which is sadly still ongoing. It has so many tragic consequences for people living in the area, but it's also had a global impact on inflation and energy prices. So looking at inflation first, it started climbing in 2021, with economies recovering from pandemic lockdowns. We thought it would be temporary, but what impact has the war in Ukraine had, and why?
Yeah, so Howard, if we cast our minds back to around 18 months or so ago, prices did start rising in the summer of 2021, largely due to companies struggling to keep up with the rapid increase in demand for both goods and services as the likes of the US, UK and Europe came out of their lockdowns. And basically people started going out to shops, restaurants and began traveling again. They began spending some of the money that they had saved during the lockdowns. But whilst these economies were opening up, the lack of state support and a shortage of vaccinations in the emerging or developing economies meant that these countries continued to remain in lockdown and were not able to produce a sufficient quantity of the many things we need and use. Many of these emerging economies, Howard, make semiconductors and computer chips. So a shortage of these being made in these countries led to a shortage of many of the things that we buy. And of course, when companies can't keep up with the pace at which people want to buy things, well, prices go up. And when demand outstrips supply, prices rise. There was a shortage of shipping containers too, and as was particularly highlighted in the English press, you may recall that there were a shortage of drivers to deliver goods, which meant transporting goods became more difficult and more expensive. It's also worth bearing in mind, Howard, that when we measure inflation, we are comparing the change in prices from 1 year to the next. And for many things, prices were exceptionally low during the height of the pandemic in 2020, when we weren't going out, we weren't spending our money, and we were certainly not going on holiday. Goods and services were much cheaper when we were all in lockdown because supply was greater than demand and therefore inflation was incredibly low at this time. So as last year drew to an end and comparing the higher prices of then to the previous year meant that the differences seemed large. But as developing economies did open up and start producing goods and the supply of both goods and services increased, so it was expected, and at the time predicted by the main central banks, that inflation would actually start coming down from around 5% at the end of last year to about 2 or 3% by the end of June. But as the events of the Ukraine war unfolded which commenced on the 20th of February of this year. Over the last 10 months or so, what we've seen is inflation increase dramatically as the price of oil and other raw materials have gone up significantly. For example, fuel bills alone jumped 54% in April of this year, and we saw further increases throughout the year, with inflation reaching 10.8% in July of this year. And Howard, you may recall that in the UK in October, inflation was at 11%. The situation in Ukraine has also had an impact on the production of certain food products, which have also helped to increase inflation. And at the same time, whilst most of the world returned to some form of normality this year with regards to COVID, parts of China have continued or been in and out of lockdown until literally days ago, and only now seeming to be opening up, largely due to the social unrest we've seen in China. Of course, with parts of China being in lockdown, particularly Guangzhou, which is a major industrial hub of China and I believe the fifth biggest city there, this has had an impact on the production of goods for the rest of the world, whilst at the same time has led to a significant lower demand in spending of goods and services in China. So in a nutshell, Howard, the impact of the war on inflation has been to see inflation across the world increase exponentially when it was expected to have fallen this year.
So how is inflation doing now? And how long do you think it will take to return to normal levels?
Well, in Spain, as I said, we saw inflation peak in July at 10.8%. But thankfully, this has been falling, and in November, it was 6.8%, which is quite a contrast to the UK. And that, as I said before, the consumer inflation figures for October was 11.1%. And whilst it dropped in November, it only decreased to 10.7%. To put it into perspective, Howard, in October, inflation was at its highest in the UK since 1981 and is still more than five times the Bank of England's 2% target rate. The general view, Howard, is that inflation should reduce slowly throughout next year, though there could be some increases at the start of the year. But when it comes to predictions, just bear in mind that, as I said before, it was only a year ago inflation was running at around 5% across much of Europe, the US and the UK, and central banks were predicting that it would be down to around 2 or 3% by June of this year. And yet we saw quite the opposite, with rates increasing to more than 10%.
And what's been happening with interest rates this year? Why are they suddenly going up, particularly in the UK?
Well, Howard, because inflation this year completely defied the predictions of the central banks and rose to multi-decade highs, central banks have hiked interest rates at what can only be termed as a ferocious and historic pace. At the beginning of the year, the UK interest rate was around 0.25%, but we then saw the Bank of England increase interest rates eight times this year, and it now stands at 3.5%. Likewise, the US saw a rate rise of 0.25% in March, followed by a 0.5% increase in May. But then they increased rates by 0.75% in June, July, September, and November. And so at the beginning of the year, interest rates were around zero, but they are currently at 4% in the US. And the reason for raising interest rates is that it's believed that this is the best way of getting inflation down, in that higher interest rates make it more expensive for people to borrow money and therefore encourage people to save. This means if people are saving, they will tend to spend less. And if people are spending less on goods and services, demand for these will reduce. And so the price of these things will rise more slowly. And with slower price rises, you then have lower inflation. Of course, the downside of this, Howard, is that in raising interest rates, many people will face higher borrowing costs and businesses will face higher loan rates. And so the central banks have to be careful not to slow economies down too much.
It's well known that stock markets don't like uncertainty, and there's certainly been a lot of that this year, as we've been discussing. So how have markets performed in 2022?
Where to begin? If we were to look at the leading world stock markets from the beginning of the year until, say, mid-May, with the exception of the FTSE 100, which is an index comprised of the largest 100 UK companies, they were all pretty much down by around 20%. Then from around mid-June until mid-August, they appeared to show a recovery where by mid-August, they were down at around 10% year-to-date, thereby recovering around half of their losses. But then they soon started falling again and dropped as much as around 25% from the beginning of the year by early October. The good news, though, Howard, is that in recent weeks, we've seen stock markets creep up slowly, though they're still down around 15 or 16% from the beginning of the year. I should also touch on bonds, though, Howard, because there will undoubtedly be many listeners who will have investments in both equities and bonds, because bonds are typically characterized as the defensive part of a portfolio, as they normally produce a stable income, and I would say historically are less volatile than equities. So they play an important part in diversification and reducing the volatility within portfolios. Equities and bonds tend to be what we term as negatively correlated, which means that when one moves up, the other goes down and vice versa. And so this has served what I would say a useful purpose for investors who do not want to invest all of their money in equities and are looking to help reduce volatility or limit paper losses in times of market turmoil. But I have to say that this relationship, so to speak, has actually broken down this year when central banks started raising the interest rates, as I explained earlier, starting really from around May onwards. Because in fact, what's happened is that both equities and bonds have suffered quite significant declines throughout this year. In fact, I would say that bonds have had record declines in prices, and this has meant that even lower risk portfolios, which normally have higher allocation to bonds, have seen their values fall as much as equities. And so there's no doubt that this has been a bad year for stock and bond markets.
So what can investors do to reduce investment risk and help protect themselves from future stock market volatility?
Well, Howard, I think this is a good question, especially as I say, both equities and bonds have fallen this year. For me, this year has emphasized to me again four things that investors can do to help protect themselves from future stock market volatility. First of all, I would say that if you are thinking about investing, before doing so, in addition to making sure that you have established your attitude to risk, also ensure that you are clear what your aims and objectives are and how long you are looking to invest for. Don't try to invest in order to make a quick gain if you believe that you're going to need to take out the money you are thinking of investing in the next few years. Secondly, once you've established your attitude to risk and objectives, the key is then to create the most appropriate investment portfolio to meet this attitude to risk and objectives, ensuring that you diversify. It's really important, I think, to be mindful of the fact that when allocating monies to an asset class, whether this is bonds, equities, or property, that the higher the concentration in a particular asset class, then the higher the risk. And so you should mitigate this risk, not just in terms of investing in a variety of different assets, but also diversify by investing in those assets in different market sectors and different countries. Do not be over-reliant in one sector or the economy of one particular country. So where we have seen this year that both bonds and equities have fallen in value, albeit to varying degrees, you are still minimizing these falls if the money you have invested in these are held in a variety of different types of equities and different types of bonds across varying countries and markets. And as part of our diversification strategy at Blevins Franks Howard, we would usually also recommend a multi-manager approach so that a client's portfolio is managed by many different fund managers, each selected for their expertise in specific market sectors. This approach then reduces the reliance on any one investment manager making the right decisions and provides the added diversification of differing managing styles. Certainly, don't put all your money in one stock, bond, or fund, even if you're convinced or your advisor is convinced that this is the bond, stock, or fund which is going to be best performing asset going forward. Because honestly, Howard, if you were to rank the performance of the various asset classes over, say, the last 10 years, then it's quite clear that they perform erratically from year to year. And an asset class which performed best one year has often been one of the worst performing the following year. it's really difficult, I would say almost impossible, to predict the best performing sector year after year. But by having a diversified portfolio covering a range of regions and asset classes, it's often possible to get better returns over a period of time whilst also achieving less volatility. Thirdly, Howard, I would say try not to make investment decisions based on emotions. As I've said in previous broadcasts this year, I come across many investors who are influenced by their emotions when buying and selling investments. And that makes sense. I mean, after all, we are humans, and in many situations, our emotions serve us well. But of course, that doesn't mean they always do. And so when we are surrounded by bad news and when we see stock markets falling and our investments are going down, I think the temptation is to listen to the part of our brain which tells us to sell and put the money in cash as opposed to staying in and wait for the recovery. Especially when, like now, it feels that the news continues to worsen and investment markets stay depressed for what seems a long time. And it really does feel like it's never going to get better again. But at some point, it will, and we've seen this many times in the past, markets each time does recover. And so investors who have acted on their emotions tend to lose out. And the fourth consideration, Howard, is about trying to time the markets. Trying to time the markets is risky, partly because of what I've just said about how emotions affect our decision making, but also because of the biggest risk of trying to time markets is the risk of missing out. Exiting the market to try and minimize losses during a time when markets are going down can actually lead to missing some of the biggest rebound days. And the problem in selling when the market is near the bottom of a downturn, and at the time it's impossible to know when it's near the bottom, is that you can easily miss out on the best of the upside. So don't try to time the markets, because even when you get out at the right time, you've then got to get back in at the right time, and very few people can do this. So make sure you are clear what your attitude and objectives are and that you have a diversified portfolio which meets this. Don't invest all your money in one fund or one asset class, and don't try to chase returns. Invest for the medium to long term or long term, and don't try and second guess or time the markets.
Let's move on to taxation now. What tax news and developments have we had in Spain this year?
Well, we had the Spanish Prime Minister, Pedro Sanchez, put forward next year's budget, which he said would protect the middle and working classes and advance social justice and guarantee the economic prosperity of Spain. Whilst the budget did take steps to reduce the income tax for people earning or receiving pension income of up to around €21,000 per year, it did also announce the introduction of a new tax called the Solidarity Tax and higher tax rates on savings income and capital gains tax. As our regular listeners will be aware, Howard, there are 17 autonomous regions in Spain, and the tax someone pays here can depend upon the rules of the region that they live in. And on the 20th of September, Andalusia approved the abolition of wealth tax. Now, for those who are not familiar with this tax, Spanish wealth tax is payable by residents and non-residents of Spain based on assets held as at the 31st December of each year. Spanish residents are liable to this tax on their worldwide assets, and non-residents are liable to this tax on their Spanish assets only. But not long after Andalusia made this announcement about getting rid of this tax for their residents, the Spanish government announced plans to impose a new solidarity tax on what they described as large fortunes, which they have in effect defined as individuals with wealth of more than €3 million. And the purpose of this new tax is to harmonise wealth taxation between the different autonomous regions, in effect stopping an autonomous region like Andalusia introducing lower rates of wealth tax or completely getting rid of it. So this new tax, Howard, if it comes in, is a central state tax on the holding of assets of more than €3 million on the 31st of December of each year. There is an allowance of €700,000 before this tax is payable, and a further allowance of €300,000 if you are a Spanish resident with a Spanish main home. And so in fact, in most cases, this is only going to affect individuals with a net wealth higher than €4 million. Now, the proposed rate starts at 1.7% and increases so that for those with assets of over 10.6 million euros, after the allowances this is, will pay 3.5% of the value of their assets each year. I must stress that if you're living in a region which has wealth tax, then if the wealth tax for that region is the same or more than what the solidarity tax calculation will be, then there will not be any solidarity tax to pay. But if the solidarity tax is more than what you would pay because of the wealth tax rates in the region that you live in are lower, then you will pay your wealth tax to the regional government that you would normally pay. But any difference between the solidarity tax and the regional wealth tax, you will then pay to the central government. If you live in a region where wealth tax is not payable, such as Madrid or Andalusia, then the solidarity tax will be fully payable to central government because no amount will be deductible. It's been stated that this will be temporary, initially for 2 years, but I think it's worth bearing in mind, Howard, that when wealth tax was reintroduced some years ago, this too was supposedly a temporary measure, but was renewed for a number of years until in 2021, when it was made permanent. The budget also announced increases in the tax rates applicable to savings income and capital gains. For residents of Spain, savings income is a tax on worldwide income which applies to dividends, bank interest, and income from life assurance contracts. And it also applies to capital gains on the sale and transfer of assets. This tax starts at 19%, but increases progressively to 26%. And it looks like there will be a new tax rate of 27% for savings tax or gains from 200,000 euros to 300,000 euros, and a rate of 28% on anything over 300,000 euros. This change could impact any listeners if, for example, they are a Spanish tax resident and are looking to sell their UK property, or they are not a Spanish tax resident but are looking to sell their Spanish holiday home. And in either situation, the gains in excess of 200,000 euros are likely to have these new higher rates of tax applied.
And what about the UK? It's certainly been an eventful year there.
Well, where do I start, Howard? Other than suggesting that number 10 Downing Street should invest in a revolving front door. This summer, we saw Boris Johnson resign. We saw Liz Truss come in, promising tax cuts and promptly having to leave because of those tax cuts. And then Rishi Sunak became Prime Minister and, with the help of his Chancellor, Jeremy Hunt, came up with an autumn budget which largely rolled back those tax cuts. The key aims of the autumn budget were to promote stability, growth and public services. And in effect, it largely extended certain thresholds which were already frozen to 2026 by a further 2 years, lowered the additional income tax rate threshold from £150,000 to £140,000, and decreased both the dividend allowance and the capital gains tax annual exempt amount. Oh, and the cuts in stamp duty land tax, which were made on the 23rd of September of this year, were changed to a temporary cut and will come to an end on the 31st of March 2025.
Are there any other 2022 events or developments worth highlighting, Brett, or any advice you want to give listeners in view of today's financial world?
Well, I think our listeners, Howard, have certainly heard enough of my voice for this year. But before we wrap it up for the year, we've spoken today about the higher inflation we've experienced this year, the potential for tax increases next year, and of course, for some of us, we've seen the value of our investments go down. And so I think it's fair to say that for many of us, it's not been a particularly good year. I know there are a lot of people out there who are struggling to feed their families and heat their homes, and clearly governments must do more to help. But I also want to just share a thought for the Ukraine and for the Ukrainian people. I just can't imagine what they have gone through this year and are continuing to go through. The fear they must be experiencing for their lives and the lives of their loved ones, families being torn apart, and innocent people being killed, and their citizens, both young and old, struggling this winter for food, shelter, light, and warmth at a level that very few of us will have experienced or could ever truly comprehend. As I've said before, it should, I think, Howard, act as a reminder for us living in the UK and Europe about how lucky we really are in that, on the whole, we've experienced peace and prosperity like never before for the last 75 plus years. And perhaps we take what we regard as our fundamental freedoms, such as our right to life, freedom and security, for granted, and we really shouldn't. And so on that note, I'd just like to wish all of our listeners, Howard, a Merry Christmas, and let's hope for a happier new year.
Yeah, and perhaps a more prosperous new year as well, we can also hope for. Thank you very much. Well, of course, we're taking a break over Christmas and New Year, and we'll be back in the second week of January. So here on TRE, we'll be back on Sunday the 8th. I guess we can wish all our listeners who are faithful all the time to us a very Merry Christmas and an excellent New Year.
Absolutely, and very Merry Christmas to yourself, Howard.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time, and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget, so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.